Okay, very good. It's good to be together again. Good evening. I always appreciate the opportunity to stand before you and do my best to preach God's Word. Every time I get up and speak to you, I get nervous. I don't think it will ever go away. What it tells me is you're important to me. I want to do a good job. I hope that something that is said up here is spiritually meaningful to you. Tonight, I want to talk to those in our crowd that have gray hair or maybe no hair. I'm talking to our older folks. So if you're maybe on the younger side, there may be a few things that you might be able to pick up from the lesson, hopefully. But primarily, my target is if you are retired, that is who I want to speak with primarily, and men or women, either gender. I've had so many men and women influence me in my life. My hope tonight is to encourage our older members to share your wisdom. I want to tell you about a friend of mine. I've mentioned his name before. You probably have never met the guy, but you've maybe heard his name. His name's Bill Murph. He's passed on probably 5 to 7, maybe well longer than that. I've been here almost 7, probably about 10 years. Bill was just a force of a man. He was an elder in the church of Eastside Church of Christ in Baytown, Texas. Bill was very wise. And I remember our congregation was going through some trouble. We had a congregation down the street that hated us. They hated us because some of us sent our children to Florida College. They thought that was wrong. And I mean, they dealt us misery. And I remember going, Bill would invite me to camp. I like to go out and sleep in the woods. And we'd go out there and he would talk. And I remember him telling me, he'd go, "Mike, where there's people, there's problems." You don't know that was such a good impression, but I'm telling you, that was my Bill Murph. That was spot on if you knew him. That's exactly how he sounded. But he said, "Mike, where there's people, there's problems." And I remember thinking, in the church? How are there problems in the church? And it made me think. It's a phrase that has stayed with me just in management, in business. Where there are people, there are problems. You know, speaking about problems, Job had problems with people. You remember, Job was a very prosperous and faithful man. He lost his family, you know, whether physically or spiritually, he lost them. And all of his worldly possessions were taken away, yet he refused to curse God. 3 of his friends arrived to comfort him. And in doing so, they insinuate that all of this calamity is because of Job's sin. Job is wishing, in chapter 12, verse 12, he wishes some wise old man, not a young 20-year-old, not who's got his head full of hair. He wants an old man that's wise and ancient to examine this disagreement between him and his friends and provide judgment. Because, as my lesson is entitled, wisdom is with the aged. Job 12, verse 12, wisdom is with the aged and understanding in length of days. I think it's generally understood that those advanced in years, those having lived long in the world, have learned much by observation and experience. You know, even mistakes and bad experiences provide much to learn from. I think about, I see women do this, some older women. Young ladies have a baby and it's sneezing or it's got a spot on it and they're not certain. And a woman goes, "That's this." They know instantly, right? They raise 2 or 3 children and they know exactly all of these illnesses. And they're able to pass on this wisdom. Men who've worked a farm, I've heard them talk about different grasses and the cattle will eat this grass, but they won't eat that grass. This experience that they've had for years has great value, and it comes with time. It doesn't necessarily come from a book. I've watched my wife pass down cooking skills to my daughters, and my daughters go, "Oh, okay." And she won't admit it, but she occasionally does have a gray hair. You know, shiny isn't always better. This is an illustration that with age, sometimes things improve in life. Think about coins. Do you ever collect coins? I used to years ago, really before I had kids. Once I had kids, I have no hobbies anymore. You basically raise children. But I had a book, and I probably have, I don't know, a couple hundred coins. And the old coins are the ones, right, that are worth more money. Would you rather have a brand new, freshly minted quarter or a 100-year-old quarter, right? These older coins have great value. I looked on eBay. I love eBay. I still use it. 1944 steel Lincoln cent for sale, $208,000, right? That was that steel penny that they minted during World War II because they needed copper for the war effort. A 1913 Liberty Head V nickel, $5 million. That's an old coin. 1794, that's almost as old as Robert McIntosh. Flowing hair silver dollar, $10 million. That's an old coin. God, has great value. You know, it's best not to clean coins. If you've collected them, you know that. We use our cleaner. It's abrasive, and it puts these micro fractures in the coin. It takes off the sheen, and it gives it an unnatural color. In fact, a coin that has been cleaned improperly is worth half of what a coin that has not been cleaned is. So just because we don't possess the strength of a 20-year-old young man or the radiating smile and beauty of a young woman doesn't mean that we don't have great value. Think of the perspective. One thing I would do when I got a coin is I would like to imagine, where has this coin traveled? Where has this coin been? Did it travel overseas, or did it go from state to state to state? Where did this coin go? Why was it minted? I mentioned that steel coin. I've got several of those that were minted during World War II, and they're lame, really. I don't like them. They don't look as pretty. But they needed the copper for war. Who might have utilized that coin? Maybe your favorite grandmother gave you a silver dollar for completing a task. I have a silver dollar. I met my grandfather one time in my life, and he gave me that silver dollar. I still have it. And it means something to me. What might have been purchased with that coin? Was it maybe used for something special? Maybe food during the Great Depression? Use your imagination by looking at these older coins, and the possibilities are endless. There could be hundreds of stories with just one coin. And I would argue that our older members are the same way. They've got stories. They've got information. They've shared the gospel. They know what works. They know what doesn't work. And we, as younger, I'm still young, we need to listen and make ourselves available. Because, again, not all that's shiny is of the most value. Proverbs 16:31, Solomon writes, "Gray hair is a crown of glory. It is gained in a righteous life." You know, in prior eras, numerous factors led to fewer people surviving to old age. Meaning, if you actually survived 100 years ago, that you were probably pretty intelligent, right? You had to know where to live, where to eat, when to grow and what to grow, how and where to hunt, what could be used for medicine, how to defend yourself. All of these were critical factors that parents and grandparents learned from their parents. And without this knowledge, you and I might not even exist. You know, we tend to neglect the value of experience, although that is what we learn best from. Imagine trying to explain to someone what it's like to ride a roller coaster, right? That's something best experienced. But how to raise godly children can be taught. You can teach that. How to be a godly husband can be taught. Men can take other young men aside, and we can be taught. Men can observe other young men and see some mistakes, and they can teach these things. How to lead others to Christ can be taught. Those that have the experience doing so can share that information. You know, there are relatively few classes on these subjects. I went to, it took me a decade to finish my college degree, and I ended up using like 5 different universities, and I never saw a class on how to raise godly children, not one. I never saw a class on how to be a godly husband, or a godly wife for that matter. I never saw a class on how to reach people and teach the gospel. These subjects are best taught by someone with experience. Someone like, imagine, I think my wife, she's raised 3 children. She picks up a baby. She can tell things that I didn't raise them like she did. I can't tell. It's a mystery to me. Those that have taught many converts can lessen the learning curve for those who have not. Think about this. Ronald Reagan didn't enter politics until age 55. I know for some in here, 55 is young. That's a while ago. He was elected governor in 67. He served until 1975, had one unsuccessful bid for president. And then 1980, we know the story, 1984, he was reelected president of the United States. He started later in life. Laura Ingalls Wilder, this is my daughter's, well, maybe not her favorite, but one of her favorite authors, Claire. Michaela has read these books too. We've gone down about an hour and a half south. You can go see her home. She sold 60 million copies of her books in 100 countries, and she was 65 when it was first published. Peter Roget's Thesaurus wasn't published until he was 73. He retired in 1840 and printed his famous, he called it a catalog of words, in 1852. So he was already retired for 12 years and put together something that is still used to this day. John Glenn went back into outer space at 77, 4 decades after he became the first American to orbit the Earth. He went back on the shuttle Discovery in 1998. Each of these people had a unique experience and parlayed it into something that helped or inspired others. You know, in the Bible, age is just another number. It's just a number, right? Sarah was 90 before she became a mother. I get it. God was involved in that. Our 90-year-olds aren't likely having children unless God gets involved. I would believe that God can do it. Abraham was 100 before becoming a father. I'm less than half that, and I'm thinking, I'm too old. Elizabeth, we don't know the age, plus or minus 60 when she bore John the Baptist. Moses lived in Egypt for 40 years, and then Midian for another 40 years. He was 80 before he led the Israelites out of Egypt. You think he had arthritis? I'm thinking so. They had arthritis back then. But God was with these people. But who's to say that God won't be with you as you share your experience with the world? You don't have to be a governor or an astronaut. Maybe you can use your experience to impact a young child in foster care. Take them to lunch. Listen to them. Help guide them. Or maybe there's a young married couple that could benefit from your advice. Maybe you've raised children and can help out a mother that you see is struggling. Maybe you could teach a Bible class. There's so much I wish that I've learned over the years from older folks that I wish I'd have known in my 20s. That's what, if I had a time machine, I would go back. Just tell me the things that I learned from older folks, and I would be far ahead of where I am now. I know that's just the best way I've learned in my life. But Moses had excuses. Moses didn't want to help, right? He was 80 years old. He had moved on, right? Those people, he did not want to help. God calls him from the burning bush, and he found so many excuses. Number one, he said, I'm not good enough. Exodus 3:11. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" I think I've heard that there were 1 million Israelites. I don't know if that number is factual, but there was a lot. And God is telling him, this is what I want you to do. Moses saying, no, who am I? God chooses the most unlikely candidates to fulfill his work. Jonah did not want to preach to the Assyrians. He got on a boat and he headed to Spain, right? You think of the Holy Land and how far away it would have been. Go around Italy and he was going to Spain to get away because he thought he could hide from God. Gideon was a farmer, not a fighter. But God wanted a faithful man to illustrate that with God, anything can be done, right? A farmer is going to lead great military victory, sure. No, but with God, he can. Peter was a fisherman, not some highly educated man, yet he was chosen for his faith and his boldness. I have known professional fishermen. They smell awful. They smell like fish, and there's almost nothing they can do to get that off of them. And it's not a profession that requires a lot of book reading, right? Some professional fishermen go off on a boat and they're gone for weeks or months. Some of them are harvesting in rivers. And I imagine Peter was probably something like that, right? This wasn't a man sitting at the feet at the temple every day. But God chooses those people for a reason. He wants to show you that a fisherman can lead people to Christ. A fisherman can stand up. Any of us can. It doesn't matter what you are or what you were. With God, you can. His next excuse, I don't have all the answers. Exodus 3:13. Then Moses said to God, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? What shall I say to them? That's a pretty good excuse. But God is asking him to be his voice, to save the Israelites from the Egyptian slavery and to fulfill the promise to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. How many times have you said you don't want to study the Bible with someone because you're not ready? I don't want to lead a Bible class because someone might ask a question that I won't know. I've got an answer for you. All the questions you ask, I generally don't know. And that happens all the time. We have to get beyond what we don't know and talk about what we do know to teach, or nothing will get done. Of course you don't have all the answers. Who does? But you can show you care. You can write down their questions or issues and get back with them. But just because you don't know everything, it's not an excuse that God accepts. That's the excuse Mike Smith has used for decades. Number three, people won't believe me. Exodus 4:1, then Moses answered, but behold, they will not believe me or listen to my voice, for they will say, the Lord did not appear to you. God didn't let Moses hide behind his natural human fear. I think I have said something similar to that on so many occasions. But remember, God doesn't expect you to win every argument or every interaction that you're in. Pharaoh, what did it require? It required 10 plagues before he finally acquiesced. Our job is to preach and teach to the best of our ability, scatter that seed out, and then see what happens, and water it and nurture it as best we can. I'm a terrible public speaker. I admitted to you, I get nervous. I'm not as nervous as I used to be. When we first moved here, and this may be too gross, but like sweat would pour from me. It isn't that bad now. But Moses sang the same thing. But Moses said to the Lord, oh my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue. At 80 years old, you're not as fast as you were at 30 or 20 or 40. And Moses is saying, this is probably just a fact. But God doesn't call the perfect man to do his work. He takes the humble and works his flawless plan through our imperfect bodies. I've mentioned before, I've finished a book about a biography about Thomas Jefferson several months ago. And I don't know if you know this, but he hated public speaking. He absolutely hated it. He didn't even want to do his inauguration speech, but he was made to do so. But he used his writing skills. I don't think you could argue there's a better author or writer in the history of the United States. He used his writing skills to convince others of his view. He would host a dinner, and he would invite his enemy, the man that was screaming the loudest against him, and he would try to have a one-on-one conversation with them. He did what he could do to communicate. Number five, Moses' excuse. I'm not qualified. I mean, he just flat out says this. Oh, Lord, my Lord, please, please send someone else. And God responds with righteous anger. And then he calls Aaron to serve alongside Moses, a man with the abilities that Moses felt he lacked. There's a saying, I love this saying. It says, if you think you can't, you're right. Have you ever heard that before? I don't know that it's attributed to anyone. But if you think you can't, you're right. Harry Truman, he's a fellow Missourian. Okay, he was a Democrat. But he felt unqualified for office. But apart from being a Democrat, he had the courage to prosecute the war with Japan, and that saved the most American lives. We are not the only people that feel unqualified to do something, right? Maybe it's teaching a class on sewing, and you think, I haven't sewed in a long time, right? If not you, then who? Moses was slow to accept the challenge, but once he committed, he was faithful until death. He displayed courage, obedience, and strength of character. And God will work with each of us once we commit. No matter our background or education, you have experience. Our world, our town here in St. James, our church needs your experience. But your commitment is required. If you don't want to, there's nothing that can make you. And young people, here's the part of the lesson for you. You have to make yourself available. If one of these older folks wants to take you to lunch, say yes. Get off your phone and establish a relationship and learn. You will learn so much more from an in-person conversation from some of our older folks than you ever will from your phone. And having a legitimate in-person relationship is far more valuable than a digital anything. So young people, we have a responsibility to listen to our elders and to make sure that we can get that information from them. I feel like so much is passing on and going with someone to the grave that the rest of us just aren't picking up. You're never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. And one of my favorite authors, C.S. Lewis. You know, I understand that sometimes your body says no. You just can't do it. I understand that. And I don't mean to make anyone feel inadequate or that they're not doing their part. Because the body says no, well, the answer is no. I understand that. Sometimes you just physically can't do what you used to. However, if you have health, what is stopping you? Write a book. When my dad passed away, he had notebook paper and he hand wrote what happened in his life. I treasure that. That means so much to me. There's so much in his life I wish I knew about. That there were big gaps in even what he wrote down. And he passed away in 2004. And I can't ask him. He's gone. All his brothers are gone. But he wrote that down. It means the world to me. One of my prized possessions. Write something down. Teach a class. Teach Zoom homeschool. If you can sit in front of a computer, sign up and teach some homeschool class. My daughter, Michaela, takes classes on Zoom, and they teach all kinds of different subjects. And if you've got experience in something, figure it out how you can teach that. I mentioned, I think, a few Wednesday nights ago, volunteer for CASA. If you have the physical capability to get out, Alicia can tell you more about that. That helps children. Babysit for a day. Find some couple that has young children and offer to keep them, just maybe for a few hours. Carol's keeping these kids during the day now. So yesterday, she said, I need help. Let's go into town. And we just ran all of these errands. Because putting kids in a little seat and then getting, you know, out and carrying, that's hard work. But offer to babysit for a day. Teach someone to sew. I probably shouldn't say this. My wife can't sew. Don't tell her I said that.
So when Claire comes home, I have this stack of clothes, and I'm like, Claire, I need these buttons sewed, or this is torn. Can you please sew that? Teach someone to sew. It's so valuable. How about this? Teach someone the Bible. Right? I'm almost 50, and there, if you were 80, you have 30 more years of Bible reading experience. There are things that you probably know in the Bible that you could say, Mike, I bet you don't know this. I'd love to hear it. And I think most of us would too. Teach someone the Bible. Find a young couple and counsel them. There's so much that you can do. Invest in the next generation. You know, we slow down physically. It gives us more time to think, right? You're not gainfully employed anymore. There just is more time. Your experience could make the difference in someone's life. Maybe they're struggling in their faith. And just by you asking them, come to lunch with us. Come over to our house. And you just ask them a few questions and listen and let that couple talk. And you find out that they need help. And you have. Maybe you've been married 50 years. You've been through these things many, many times. Maybe you can help. You have wisdom and you have experience. Remember, you don't have to be John Glenn, an astronaut, to be able to pass down what you've learned and what you know. And it is needed by this younger generation needs your wisdom, right? We all look out and we go, boy, this next generation, I don't know, right? You've got wisdom and experience. Share it. Think about what can be passed down, what can be accomplished. Lives and generations impacted. It sounds silly, but you can change the world. If you can't change the world, you can change our church. You can change and impact people here. Psalm 90:10, David writes, the years of our life are 70, or even by reason of strength of 80, yet their span is but toil and trouble. They are soon gone, and we fly away. I ask you, think right now. What is your legacy? When you pass away and everyone's at the funeral, what are they going to say? What will they say about you? It's not too late. You can impact your children and grandchildren. I know they don't listen. I know that. I have children. I know they don't listen. Find a way to communicate. Can you impact our church? I ask you that. Can you impact our church? Can you impact someone? If you can't impact our congregation, is there someone here, one person, that you could impact? We will all breathe our last breath and experience our final day on this earth. I challenge you. I implore you. Make your impact. Find that something that you do well and pass it on to someone. Show them. I haven't spoken tonight about the plan of salvation, but we do make this time and opportunity available for any that need to respond to the invitation. And we make that opportunity available right now.